Good evening. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are a few. Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. Lately, in practice discussions and elsewhere, I've been hearing people express, several people express some despair about the state of the world and the political situation in this country and elsewhere. And I've found myself at times feeling like that also. And so what I've found most helpful as an antidote of late has been sort of taking a larger, getting a bigger perspective on things and studying human nature, and as well as encouragements for using our imagination. So I wanted to share some of those with you tonight. As we just chanted, let no one deceive one another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none by anger or hatred wish harm to another. Even as a mother, at the risk of her life, watches over and protects her only child. So with a boundless mind should one cherish all living beings, suffusing love over the entire world, above, below, and all around, without limit. So let one cultivate an infinite goodwill toward the whole world. I think something can happen to us when we chant or contemplate these words. It's an opportunity to express a personal ethics and a possible positive vision for the world. It feels good, or can feel good, to express ourselves in this way. And I believe that's because we actually express something that's really true about ourselves and also about others and about reality. Buddhist teachings on non-self or interbeing proposes that my happiness is intimately bound up with my capacity to cultivate an infinite goodwill toward the whole world. This is a liberating practice, cultivating this loving kindness. And to put these words into practice truly, however, is to truly cherish all living beings. All living beings. It's not easy. As Dostoevsky said, it's easier to love humankind than your neighbor. If we can put these words into practice, we can begin to soften our reactions to others. It's easy to label them as bad, wrong, or evil. And once we've done so, we've really limited the possibilities for relationship and resolving conflict, where force and coercion suddenly make sense. If we've lost hope for one another's humanity. This is why Mahatma Gandhi said that we must never lose our faith in humanity. He was not just a person of faith, but very much an activist. When I first encountered Buddhism, the teaching, I remember really sort of hooking me at first, because it resonated with an already established belief that I held somewhere within myself, was a view of human nature that was fundamentally positive, and in contrast to the form of religion that I've been around growing up. Some of you probably heard me share this before. In the early scriptures of the Pali Canon, the Buddha exclaims that This mind, O monks, is luminous. Only it is defiled by adventitious defilements from without. And what this means is that this luminosity is more fundamental to us and who we are than the greed, hate, and delusion that take over our minds in certain moments, and as well as minds of others. And when we behave in unwise, harmful ways, it's not because we're bad or evil, but because of our delusions, misunderstanding about ourselves and our role in the universe, and our ancient twisted karma that sort of causes us to act out in body, speech, and mind. But only because we fail to grasp reality as it truly is. We're not separate from each other, and we're not fundamentally bad. There is opportunities for change that we can't perceive. I've been, just the last few days, so I've been driving, listening to the journalist Georges Monbiot, whose book, the name of Out of the Wreckage, A New Politics for an Age of Crisis. And so he discusses above all the need for imagination in politics. And he does so by starting with sort of waking us up to how our ideas about our own species are wrong and self-limiting, how studies in psychology and neuroscience and evolutionary biology all point to the same conclusions, that we humans are, quote, spectacularly unusual when compared to other animals, and that we exhibit an astonishing degree of altruism, our kindness towards other members of our species. We possess an unparalleled sensitivity to the needs of others, a unique level of concern about their welfare, and a peerless ability to create moral norms that generalize and enforce these tendencies. And this is, sort of goes on and saying, even among mammals, with the possible exception of the naked mole rat, which I'm not familiar with, but maybe we're not quite alone and unique, but you know, it's, we're that as rare a species as the naked mole rat in these ways. We humans are the supreme cooperators. And as we evolved, we survived despite being weaker and slower than both our potential predators and most of our prey. We did so through developing to an extraordinary degree a capacity for mutual aid. As it was essential to our survival, this urge to cooperate was hardwired into our brains through natural selection. And this has not been lost, emphasizes. Monbiot quotes a survey where, psychology survey, where 75% of the 74% respondents identified more strongly with unselfish values than with selfish ones. What this means is that they're more interested in helpfulness, honesty, forgiveness, and justice than in money, fame, status and power. And even a slightly larger majority, 78%, they found, believe others to be more selfish than they really are. And so his conclusion here is that we have made a terrible mistake about other people's minds. saying our extraordinary capacity for altruism and our remarkably social nature are the central, crucial facts about humankind. Yet we remain, to an astonishing degree, unaware of them. This is partly because our minds, which are always on the lookout for signs of danger, emphasize the rare but spectacular acts of violence a small proportion of the population inflicts on others. But we fail to notice the daily acts of kindness and cooperation the rest of us perform, often unconsciously. This tendency is reinforced today by news reports. And so just as Buddhist teachings assert that our luminous, awakened, compassionate mind is more fundamental to who we are than any acts that arise out of our afflictive emotions. It seems like modern science, too, also considers altruism more innate than selfishness. I've read things like this in the past and been inspired, and sort of reading something like this again, I've been struck by how there's a certain extent, you know, too large an extent certainly, still live in a mind where I hold a story that's actually very different from my everyday experiences. I spend time in this sangha, in a couple of different hospitals, in my local community, and I see acts of kindness and generosity and compassion every day, multiple times a day. And so even so, I tend to view these remarkable acts of kindness and these people as exceptions. And to place more weight on images and stories that are projected from far away as to what constitutes my belief in our nature, rather. And of course, at times I also see behavior that appears self-centered, especially within myself, my own mind. Though, when I see such behavior in self and others, it's rarely disregarding of others, and if it is, it's pretty apparent that it's arising out of fear and anxiety. That's under certain stressful conditions, our less flattering sides will come out, be expressed. So as these experiences I have in my everyday life, and I hope you too in your everyday lives, seem to be in stark contrast to most of the news I consume. I think for most of us who are fortunate enough to be healthy enough and secure enough, it's not our everyday lives that cause us despair, but rather the pieces of information we consume about what's happening on a larger scale. I look back as I was giving a talk, I think it was the day after Inauguration Day, and somewhere during that preparation, maybe it was the day before, I looked at the news on The Guardian, you know, this is a liberal, independent newspaper, and it was just so striking, like, I kept it, because I didn't mention it in the talk, but I thought about it, that it was like, the four articles right next to each other was, you know, the headlines were, "Has the world gone mad? It has. Foreign reporters share perspectives on Trump. 1, 2, the world braces for Trump, hoping for the best, and prepared for the worst. 3, everything, everywhere, all at once, what will be unleashed? 4, fear of what's to happen, Haitians brace for Trump's return." So, just kind of want to bring up is, what does this actually do to our minds if we expose ourselves to this news quotation maybe several times a day? What does it do to our outlook on the world and on each other. There is, even in well-meaning news sources, I think still this little need, you know, there's a, if I click on that link, it's somebody's making money on an advertisement or something, you know, there's still a business going on, and that little feeling of can make my like more likely to follow that link, and yeah, what does that do to my own mind and my peace of mind? Thich Nhat Hanh and his instructions, descriptions of the precepts, he sort of reworked these several times. We say in our the fifth great precepts, it's about, you know, not intoxicating mind or body of self or others, is what we say. And it's kind of short. He fleshes it out and uses positive language, which we do sometimes, and so does Zen too. But he talks about this, you know, calls them mindfulness trainings, but they're really the precepts. The fifth one being about nourishment and healing. And so as he cautions against consumption of what we traditionally think of as intoxicants, of alcohol and drugs, he also goes on to mention other projects which contain toxins, such as certain websites, electronic games, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. And then in his, this was in the early one, and then he added later, quote, excuse me, I will practice coming back to the present moment to be in touch with the refreshing, healing, and nourishing elements in me and around me, not letting regrets or sorrow drag me back into the past, nor letting anxieties, fear, or craving pull me out of the present moment. I am determined not to try to cover up loneliness, anxiety, or other suffering by losing myself in consumption. I will contemplate interbeing and consume in a way that preserves peace, joy, and well-being in my body and consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family, my society, and the earth. And so this is, it's not just a practice of a personal peace, it has ethical implications, right? This is a practice of ethics, but which is about just taking care of our own peace of mind, and being mindful of what we're consuming, and not just thinking of consumption as food and drink, but whatever we take into our consciousness, is it wholesome? Is it helpful? Again, Suzuki Roshi, in the beginner's mind there are many possibilities, in the expert's mind there are a few. I think if our consumption of media appears to limit the possibilities that we see, then maybe we need to reconsider what is serving us. Biel says in his book that, back to despair, that despair is a state we fall into when our imagination fails, when we have no stories that describe the present and guide the future, hope evaporates. Political failure is, in essence, a failure of imagination. I was reflecting on years ago when I was struggling with some significant back problems, the discipline that eventually worked, going to a chiropractor or something, just things went right back into the place they had been a few days, you know, after getting some correction. But I was going to a Feldenkrais practitioner and be laying on this table, and she'd be moving my arms and legs around and shoulders and so forth. And the way I understood the discipline was basically, as she was moving me, she could see where there was resistance and also where there was habit, you know, and essentially like my body had gotten used to doing certain activities and holding certain postures in specific ways. And then you strengthen those neural networks, I think, in the brain, and your head forgets that your body has all these other possibilities, opportunities. And by moving my body where it wasn't used to going, it's basically giving me more possibilities. And then naturally, my body would be more inclined to do something in a way that was efficient and lighter on it and not putting strain. And so I think similarly, we've got to kind of find ways to create opportunities to be, you know, for our minds to see possibilities where we don't see them, where we get caught in certain grooves and patterns of mind, patterns of thinking. And so I see it. I was talking to somebody recently who was distressed and despair about sort of the state of politics in this country. And he also said, like, I feel like I noticed that as I'm trying to stay on top of what's going on, that these feelings of anxiety just become stronger. But I also feel like if I don't, read this in staying form, then it's irresponsible, and I'm not, you know, it's like there was a push and a pull there of like noticing on an emotional level, like this isn't good, but also like, well, not doing this is irresponsible, and I shouldn't be doing this either, right? I need to. At least I'm staying informed. Maybe I can't do anything else. So I think that we have it's a paradox here, apparent one anyway, that on the one hand, as citizens in a democracy, we have a responsibility to stay informed about what's going on around us and see where we can serve. And as practitioners, it's our practice to not seek expertise, to maintain a beginner's mind, to not fall into being limited by our knowledge, to limit the possibilities. Of course, beginner's mind doesn't mean ignorance. Doesn't mean just don't paying attention to anything. If that was the case, then we would never study the Dharma, and we wouldn't chant the same text twice ever, either. Beginner's mind means to maintain an open mind, to cultivate a mind that sees opportunities, and also that questions the hindrances that we perceive. And for us to be able to do so, hope, faith in humankind, and imagination are all essential. Thank you very much.